From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo sat down with Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov in Washington on Tuesday, and the two held a joint press conference where they discussed bilateral, regional, and international issues. We bring you as much of that as time will allow.
Ladies and gentlemen, first and foremost, I would like to express my gratitude to Secretary Pompeo for the opportunity to meet here in Washington. We have accepted the invitation to visit the United States as a response visit after Secretary Pompeo traveled to the Russian Federation to Sochi in May this year. There was a meeting with the President of the Russian Federation as well as our meaningful, rather lengthy negotiations. We meet each other regularly and we regularly talk on the phone when necessary. Today's meeting has confirmed that it is useful to talk to each other. However difficult this period in our relation is, and including the global affairs, talking to each other is always better than not talking to each other. We have thoroughly discussed bilateral situation in our affairs. We spoke about strategic stability, arms control, and we spoke frankly and businesslike. We were trying not only to hear, not only to listen to each other, but to hear each other. It's an open secret that we have different views on different things, and it would be naive to think that overnight we could achieve mutual understanding on key issues. But I believe that was always so. More or less, there is no 100% coincidence in positions, and the diplomacy is basically trying to find solutions that would not infringe on vested interests of each other's side, but that would allow to avoid conflicts and rather promote constructive cooperation. Indeed, we agree with our American partners, just like Mike just said, the situation when two leading major nuclear powers have accumulated differences, that is not acceptable, it does not benefit our countries or the international community. That creates additional tension in global arena and in the world on the whole. So we will continue our dialogue. We have reciprocal intent to do that, and we have opportunities how to normalize our bilateral relations. We understand that our joint work was hindered and it continues to be hindered by the wave of suspicions that has overcome Washington. We have highlighted once again that all speculations about our alleged interference in domestic processes in the United States are baseless. There are no facts that would support that. We did not see these facts. No one has given us this proof because simply it does not exist. I'd like to remind you that when the first statements on this topic began, that was on the eve of the presidential election in 2016, we used the channels that existed back then between Moscow and Washington together with Barack Obama. We have asked many times our American partners about the opportunity to deal with these suspicions that were expressed in October 2016, all the way up to President Trump's inauguration. There was no response. All our appeals, when we were saying, if you suspect us of something, please put the facts down on the table, let's discuss it. It had zero response. So all that continued after the inauguration of the new administration, after the inauguration of President Trump. We suggested to our colleagues that in order to dispel all suspicions that are baseless, let us publish this closed channel correspondence starting from October 2016 till November 2017, so it would all become very clear to many people. However, regrettably, this administration refused to do so. But I'd like to repeat once again, we are prepared to do that, to publish the correspondence that took place through that channel would clear many matters up, I believe. Nevertheless, we hope that
ярости понемногу улягутся.
That the turbulence that appeared out of thin air will die down, just like in 1950s McCarthyism came to naught. And there'll be an opportunity to go back to a more constructive cooperation. Incidentally, we have offered multiple times, and we reminded about that today, to put on paper the mutual obligations on non-interference in domestic affairs of each other, using the example of the exchange of personal notes that took place in 1933, when diplomatic relations were re-established between the United States and the USSR. President Roosevelt
suggested,
and we agreed to do that, to exchange letters between President Roosevelt and our Minister of Foreign Affairs, Litvinov, to put it on paper, this obligation not to allow for any interference in domestic affairs of each other. That was the initiative of the American side, and we are prepared to do something similar. At this point in time, at this very crucial stage, we agreed that it would be incorrect to put our relations on hold, to pause them, or to postpone our interaction on topical issues of modern times. We are prepared to do practical work
whole range of
issues that are for mutual interest, and we are prepared to do so with that level of intensity that is convenient today for our American partners. One of the central topics of our discussion was strategic stability. We've directed the attention of our partners at the negative consequences of the U.S. stepping out of the INF treaty. And we have highlighted once again that in these conditions, after this treaty stopped existing, we're interested in not letting this theme out of our advisors, and we suggested, President Putin suggested to the U.S. and other partners as well, and Russia is that Russia is announcing a unilateral moratorium on deploying such missiles, and they will not be deployed up until then and in those regions, up until the point where the similar systems appear. The American systems. That suggestion was made to our Western partners, including the U.S., for such moratorium to become mutual. This offer remains on the table. We also spoke about the destiny of yet another treaty that is still not expired, and it will expire automatically in February 2021, I mean the New START treaty. Russia has reconfirmed its offer already now to make decision to extend this treaty. President Putin has expressed this position, reconfirmed it in his public speech.
Мы также подтверждаем предложение, опять же, по примеру Советского Союза, Соединенных Штатов,
example of the USSR and the U.S. to make a statement at the level of presidents about inacceptability of starting a nuclear war. This suggestion is also on the table. As for global affairs, we spoke about the Ukraine. I have briefed thoroughly Secretary Pompeo and his delegation about yesterday's discussions in Normandy 4 format in Paris, about the decisions made there, and about those issues that have yet to be settled in order to move on fully towards full observance of Minsk agreements. And it is of principal importance that the outcome document that the presidents of Russia, Ukraine, France, and Germany have endorsed reconfirms the inviolability of the Minsk agreement and requires their full observance. That is 100% our
position.
We also spoke about the need
to continue our discussion
about the paths how to overcome the crisis around the Iranian nuclear program. You are well aware of our position. We believe it is necessary to do everything in our power to save JCPOA in order to ensure the peaceful nature of Iranian nuclear research. Naturally, we are very concerned about the situation that is taking place in the Persian Gulf, in the Strait of Hormuz, and we
все страны, которые хотят обеспечивать там безопасность судоходства и мореплавания, рассмотрели предложение, которое российская сторона внесла. Оно касается налаживания диалога о создании системы коллективной безопасности. Мы уже провели на уровне политологов, экспертов, научного сообщества в сентябре в Москве специальный семинар.
Многие страны регионов, including the Arab states of the Persian Gulf, that have taken part in that, as well as a number of European scientists. We have also invited U.S. representatives, and we hope that next time they will take part in such an event.
As Secretary Pompeo has said,
we spoke about the situation around Venezuela. Russia consistently promotes the idea that it should be Venezuelan-led, and the people should define their future. And those crowds of dialogue that were first seen in the Oslo format, that unfortunately is in limbo right now. And that dialogue that we are seeing in the roundtable between the moderate opposition and the government would yield the necessary result, and the crisis will be settled through peaceful means only. We spoke about the situation in the Korean Peninsula. We're promoting denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. And against that backdrop, we see that we believe contacts between the U.S. and the PRK are very important. We hope that the position that we have also discussed with Secretary Pompeo, the position of Russia and China, we're coordinating our approaches with China on these matters, that will be useful in order for Washington to define their future path, considering the current stalemate in the negotiation process. We believe that in order to get out of this impasse, it is necessary to move forward with reciprocal measures, measure for measure.
Направлении мы готовы всячески активно помогать преодолению нынешней ситуации. Мы говорили про Сирию, резолюция 2254, охватывает все рамки, которые должны определять движение по урегулированию во всех аспектах, подчеркнули необходимость сотрудничества России и Соединенных Штатов в других игроков по окончательному искоренению терроризма на сирийской территории,
eliminate terrorism on Syrian territory in order to solve humanitarian issues, as well as need for a sustainable, constructive political process that has begun in Geneva within the Constitutional Committee, where the Syrian side have to agree about the future of their country. We spoke about other hotbeds of tension in the Middle East and north of Africa. There are many of them there. In particular, I believe we have mutual interest about closer cooperation on the Libyan settlement. We are cooperating on the situation around Yemen. And of course, it is very important to keep in our eyesight the Palestine-Israeli settlement that is apparently stalling, and it is in critical condition. We also spoke about our bilateral affairs, and as I have already said, presidents of the U.S. and Russia back in their during the summit in Helsinki in 2018, and later at their meeting in Osaka in June this year, have agreed about a whole number of specific steps. And as one of the results, there was renewed counterterrorism dialogue. It took place 1 year ago, and several rounds have already taken place. That allows for a more efficient fight against this scourge, both for Russia, the U.S., and as well as the global community. We expect that this format will remain an intensive exchange, and now we have Mr. John Sullivan, and there will be a change of leadership there. He'll be taking part in hearings in Senate about his appointment to the Russian Federation. We know him as a very highly professional diplomat will be happy to cooperate with him. Naturally, we believe that our ambassador to Washington would also receive the same level of support.
Ну и по экономике, несмотря на санкции,
economy,
которые, как известно, вредят всем,
торговля
при президентстве Дональда Трампа уверенно росла с уровня 20 миллиардов долларов, на котором мы этот объем торговли извел президент Обама.
По итогам этого года помог
достичь уровня 27 миллиардов, это почти на одну треть.
Level of 27 billion, that's more around one-third of growth, that means more jobs in both countries, that means more profit for producers. Now I believe that if this cooperation would gain additional impetus, then the results would be even more mutually beneficial. We have agreed to continue to find paths in order to alleviate certain triggers in bilateral sphere. Therefore, I mean, this is the situation with the arrest of Russian citizens abroad, the visa situation, both for our delegations that take part in international events of the U.S. territory, as well as for diplomats, as well as the situation with diplomatic property. We have agreed that our deputies will continue specific discussions on all these issues that we want to make them constructive and yield results, what's most important. In the end, I'd like to say that with all difficulties and differences, there is great potential for our cooperation in economy and in other spheres. And it is in the interest of both countries to tap into that potential fully and to develop our relations to the benefit of our countries and the whole global community. That is our intent, and today we felt there is a reciprocity, the same commitment of the American side. I'm thankful to Mike Pompeo.
We
would like to continue this dialogue, and I would like to invite him to visit Russia when it is possible. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for the invitation. Please.
We'll start with Rich Edson, Fox News.
Good afternoon, Mr. Secretary. On North Korea and your discussions with North Korea, are you satisfied with Russian and other countries' sanctions enforcement? And then also within the past week, North Korea has warned of a Christmas gift for the United States. Is the administration prepared or expect North Korea to return to a more aggressive posture, perhaps want to terminate negotiations? Foreign Minister Lavrov, in your discussions over Paul Whelan, are the U.S. and Russia any closer to resolving that case? Is Paul Whelan any closer today to freedom? And also, Mr. Foreign Minister, do you believe that Ukraine meddled in the U.S. election in 2016? And is that specifically something that you discussed with the Secretary today? Thank you.
Thank you. With respect to North Korea, we've worked with the Russians on enforcement. I've told Foreign Minister Lavrov repeatedly that we appreciate the enforcement level that they have. They've done good work. These are UN Security Council resolutions. These aren't American sanctions per se. These are all driven by the UN Security Council, resolutions that the Russians voted for themselves. There's always more work to be done on enforcement. There's a major event on the 22nd of December where every nation is required to have all North Korean workers out of their country. We talked about that today and the importance. There are many North Korean workers that have been in Russia. The UN Security Council resolution requires them to depart. We're hopeful that they will be able to complete that and come into full compliance with that. As for our expectations with respect to North Korea's behavior, I think President Trump's been unambiguous about our expectation. Chairman Kim personally made the commitment to denuclearize, said there wouldn't be long-range missile tests, nuclear tests. All of those are commitments that we are very hopeful that the North Koreans will continue to abide by. We continue to work to try and develop places where we can communicate, negotiation mechanisms where we can talk to them about paths forward to achieve the denuclearization that both Foreign Minister Lavrov and I are determined to help the North Koreans achieve. It's a place where we have overlap on our objective. We need to jointly figure out a way together to assist the North Koreans to get there so that North Korea can and the North Korean people can have the brighter future that President Trump has spoken so often about.
As for North Korea, I would like to add a few words on that. You asked whether the U.S. is satisfied with the enforcement of sanctions against North Korea, the sanctions by the U.N. Security Council. Indeed, sanctions are an instrument that is being used by the U.N. Security Council. However, that resolution does not deal only with sanctions. They also include the need to engage more actively in political process, and that is often being lost. Now, these efforts to cover the current situation, we're convinced that this political process needs to be actively supported, and a key role is being played by the direct dialogue between the U.S. and Pyongyang, and we promote the reestablishment of this dialogue. We're positive that this dialogue can yield result only in the case when it follows the idea of reciprocal steps. You cannot demand North Korea to do everything and right now, and only then go back to ensuring its security and lifting the sanctions and the rest of all of it. The humanitarian situation in North Korea requires urgent steps that would allow to understand the capability of the global community, not only to deal with the resolutions, but also the preparedness of the global community to respond to absolutely legitimate economic and humanitarian needs of North Korea. Right now, in those goods that are not being covered by any sanctions, neither the UN sanctions nor the US sanctions, are very hard to deliver to North Korea because producing companies as well as transportation companies are afraid. They're simply afraid that for only mentioning that they had certain, even though legitimate business, but business with North Korea, they can be punished again. This situation has brought us to that impasse where we are at right now. And we call upon the North Korean leadership to show restraint, of course, and we expect that the conditions will be created for the renewal of this dialogue. As for Paul Whelan, back in September, the investigation has stopped, and he has time to acknowledge himself, to acquaint himself with the accusations, and now together with his lawyers, he is studying these documents. After that, the court process will proceed, and that would put an end to this case. And after that, using bilateral documents that we have between us, the official documents in law enforcement sphere, we can make these or that decisions. I'd like to highlight that a lot is being talked about the health of Paul Whelan, and we treat this issue with all seriousness. Our doctors examine him regularly. He was complaining of groin hernia. We suggested to operate on that. He decided not to do that. I'd like to highlight once again that Paul Whelan, maybe this tactic chosen by his lawyers is now it's he's threatening the penitentiary officers, and he makes all kinds of arrogant accusations. And for example, he's saying that he'll put a drill to the head of the officer. Maybe if these tactics of the lawyers are aimed at to create an image of a martyr, maybe that is not a correct one, not a correct approach, and not an honest one. I'd like to repeat again, we're acting in full compliance with our law and those international norms that can be applied in this case. As for Ukraine and elections in the United States in 2016, it has nothing to do with us. That is an issue for two sovereign states. However, that allows to understand the absurdity of accusations against us that were saying that we ostensibly interfered in the elections. We proposed to publish their correspondence about, and I spoke about that. We are prepared to do that as soon as Washington confirms their agreement to publish these important documents that are important for the community.
Some.
Thank you so much, Yelena Chernenko, Kommersant newspaper. A question for both colleagues. Did it become any clear the destiny of the New START treaty? Will it be extended? And a clarification for Mr. Lavrov. What do you think about the American argument that there is a need to engage China? Is it indeed a sincere desire to engage China in negotiations, or as it's called here, red herring, trying to find reason not to extend this treaty? Now to Secretary Pompeo, clarify please. How the U.S. intend to engage China in this negotiation, considering the disbalance in this sphere between different states? And if you'd allow yet another question to Mr. Pompeo from a different sphere. Why do U.S. refuse to give green light to publishing the materials that Russian minister spoke about, the correspondence between the White House and the Kremlin about interference in elections? As far as I understand, this correspondence took place in the fall of 2016 and in the winter of 2017. Well, since we're talking about the extension of a New START treaty, I'd like to say that, as I have already said in my initial remarks, the Russian president spoke again about Russia's preparedness to right now agree on its extension in order to alleviate the tension for the global community, considering that the last instrument of arms control between the U.S. and the Russian Federation
will not be destroyed, but it will not be in force
anymore. And we are prepared to do that even today. And the ball is in our American partners' court. As for China, President spoke about that multiple times. If China is prepared to engage in that, to join that, we'll support such an approach. And in that case, we'll need to look at other nuclear powers, both official and unofficial. China spoke clearly that they will not take part in any negotiations, because neither on the number or the structure of their nuclear arsenal, they're not on par with Russia and the U.S. We spoke about that today. We looked at the statistics provided by the Swedish Research for Peace, provided on China, on Chinese nuclear arsenal, in comparison with Russian and the U.S. arsenal. And, of course, we're talking about big figures, big difference in figures. Of course, if China is prepared to do that, we're prepared to review a multilateral process in nuclear disarmament. Nevertheless, as President Putin has said to Secretary Pompeo in Sochi in May this year, this situation naturally requires negotiations, because there is no specific offer on the table by our American partners. And it will take some time.
И Россия, и США, как две по-прежнему крупнейших ядерных державы, могли бы объявить о продлении договора об СНВ, ну и тем самым подуспокоить мировое общественное мнение. Это было бы неплохо.
I'll take your second question, then I'll return to the important conversation on our strategic dialogue, strategic arms control. We'll publish all the documents we think appropriate. We think we've shared plenty of facts to show what happened in the 2016 election with our Russian counterparts. We don't think there's any mistake about what really transpired there. As for strategic arms control, your question was about New START in particular, but of course it can't be the case that that can be the sole focus. That's an agreement that was entered into many years ago when powers were very different on a relative basis around the globe. It was at a time when the weapon systems, the threats, were very different than they are today, too. The risks to strategic instability today are different. It's no longer just missiles, just bombers, just submarines, just warheads. There are many other tools which can create strategic instability. So we believe not only do the conversations need to be broadened to include the Chinese Communist Party, but they need to be broadened as well to encompass the full range of instruments of power that can create the very strategic instability that New START, the INF, the full range of agreements that have been entered into decades ago presented to the world. That's our objective. It's our joint objective, I think. We have to get it right. Before Mr. Lavrov talked about the fact that China has fewer of some of those weapon systems today, that's an accurate statement.
But to enter into these conversations doesn't necessarily mean that we would cap any one country at any particular level. The objective isn't about that. It's about developing a set of conditions which create the very stability for the security of both our people, the people of the United States, the people of Russia, people all around the world are demanding from a good strategic dialogue. And so I hope that we can commence this. I hope we can begin to move forward in a way that is constructive. All the relevant parties talking about all the relevant threats to strategic stability around the world. And if we can do that, I'm confident that we can make real progress together. Thank you for your question.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.